Hey guys, welcome back to the Tim Bowen Show. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you hit like, subscribe, just nudge that subscribe button. Just give it a little love tap there. Get that bell notification going. As you guys know, I have been on a bit of a fitness journey myself. I was kind of fat and lazy a few months ago, and I decided to get off the couch for some reason. I don't even know why. And this is one of the things I wanted to talk about to my guests about is these ebbs and flows we go through in staying healthy and being fit. Today I have a special present for you. It's a fitness power couple. He is a power lifter slash bodybuilder slash coach. She is like a professional bodybuilder slash coach. I've been listening to their podcast. It's the Stay Peaked podcast. Make sure you check it out. These guys have been keeping it real. I mean, they go through everything. There's nothing off the table on that podcast. We're talking about kicking cocaine addiction, talking about their breakups, talking about, you know, camping trips, all sorts of things. And I'm there for it, man. And welcome Sam and Tim to the show. It's Tim Walcott and Sam Slays.
No, I'm also Sam Walcott now.
Oh, there you go. You got, yeah, that's right. You guys just got married.
As of January. Yeah,
it was Sam Slater.
Sam Slater. Okay. Very good. All right. Tell me your story. So I've been following your podcast, and it's like I'm looking for the backstory. There's no origin story that I could find in your podcast. We just kind of like, if you start on episode one of Stay Peaked, it's just kind of a peek into your life midstream. So where did it all? What's your origin story? How did you guys meet? How did you start on your fitness journey?
That's a good question. And I realized that we had that conversation a few times with our producer, where he's like, we probably should at some point dive into the origin story and have that conversation, because we've kind of alluded to a lot of it, but we haven't had an episode or two kind of dedicated to that story. But I guess I could kind of start with my story in fitness, and then she could tell hers, and then how that kind of came to be. And then that's ultimately how Stay Peak started. Probably a good place to start, right? So for me, 2017, I 7-8 years ago now, I started a private personal training studio in person, and I was just doing one-on-one coaching. I've been doing in-person personal training, or sorry, in-home personal training for 6 months or so, and that was my into the industry. And then from there, I was like, I had people locally that were like, hey, I'd love to work with you, but you don't have a gym, and I don't have a home gym. You know, it was kind of a different demographic. So I'm like, man, it'd be so much better just to have people come see me. So I went and found some space, ended up being in a building that my father owned. And he had said, hey, I have empty space here if you want to lease it from me. I said, well, I'm pretty grateful for that. That was a great network to say the least. But yeah, so he hooked me up in that regard, and he had empty space. So I've been leasing it from him ever since. And that was me working, building that business. And then I realized, hey, I love this, but I love coaching. And if I love coaching, I'm going to be able to reach way more people if I develop an online presence. So that was when I started an online coaching company, Vallejo Fitness Coaching, and that was separate from my in-person. And I've been growing both in tandem, Modus, the in-person since 2017, the online side in the last, you know, officially in the last year, year and a half. So from there, I met Sam in 2020, end of 2020, and then
in a gym.
I was doing bench press, and I asked her to spot me, and she graciously did that. Didn't let me die, which was great.
That's awesome.
I think I could bench the same as you at that
point. Yeah, I think we were just as strong at the time, and obviously I couldn't have that, so I said, okay, well, time to actually get strong here and stop playing around.
That's awesome. But, I literally just asked my wife to spot me downstairs right before this podcast. So
you look like you got a little pump there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I got a little. Oh well, thank you. Jeez, I feel. I don't know what I feel. I feel, you know, when your gym bro crush kind of says, "Hey,
that's it, right?" Exactly.
It's like
exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll let Sam kind of tell her story into bodybuilding and stuff. I've done the odd four now competitive powerlifting competitions, and I've taken a brief hiatus from that as I was dieting. And actually, probably be a good thing to revisit throughout this conversation, because I had some ebbs and flows there as well with my own training and my mental health. And then I'm at the end of my diet now. So I'm looking to kind of ease back into the powerlifting training and take it more seriously as I head into this year and then compete again in the fall probably. Okay. But yeah, and then, yeah, I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah. Well, mine starts way back playing a lot of competitive sports growing up. And then kind of as I went to university and those sports kind of die off because, you know, you're an adult and pickup is not as great as having an organized team and stuff like that. I found the gym and I used to go with a few friends in university. So I started training and that kind of morphed into, as soon as I graduated, just kept going. And I was like, I went to a gym where they had all the top members up and I always had to be the member that came the most. Because I was so competitive, right? So it was always my name every month. I would come every day, even if it was just a stretch, right?
Right.
One of the trainers was like, oh, you should compete. And I was like, oh, what's that? I don't know what that is. And he shows me a bunch of pictures online of these girls up there, you know, in their bikinis doing stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's, I'm doing that. Nice. And my first competition in 2015. So it's been 9 years now competing. I am at the national level, so I'm going for pro status this year.
Okay.
And then my transition into being a coach was I was working for a few years as a microbiologist, actually.
Hmm.
And as much as it was fine, it was, you know, the same thing every day, stuck in a lab with no windows. And just wasn't me and I wasn't right. happy. So I took a risk and just straight up quit my job one day without having anything lined up because I was like, I'll make it work. And then within that week, I was like hired at Good Life to be a personal trainer and then took off from there. I was working in person at Tim's studio for a bit. Not even like when we first started dating, it was quite a while before I transitioned.
Yeah, probably 2021 to 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then still was like, that's not my full goal. My full goal was to be fully online and then niche down to more prepping people for competitions. And right. I've now accomplished that. So I'm very happy about that. And we have a growing team of clients that, they're going to be, I have clients in 19 competitions this year alone.
Wow. So
very, very excited about that. And I'm doing my own in June.
So. Very cool. Very cool. Okay. So did you guys meet before Tim had a studio? Like Tim, what were you doing at another gym if you had your own studio?
To train.
Good question. So,
were
and
you
people
just,
ask
like,
me
cruising
that.
Cruising for women or what?
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, people... Man, that's a good question because people ask me that all the time. They're like, I'll tell clients, right? I'll be like, oh, I'm going to go train later. And then they're like, why don't you just train here?
Right.
And I'm a big believer, at least for me personally, that I got to have like separation of work. Mm. So for me, it's like, I love my work and I love going to work, but I also love leaving work. It's
right.
like, it's all in the thing. So like, and for me, training is that, kind of a corny term, but like it is kind of an escape. It's a chance to like reset mentally. And so yeah. I can kind of look forward to that and check out a little bit. So for me doing that, I mean, I also have logistically, I have other coaches there as well. So yeah. I would have to schedule around that if I wanted to train there, but I was at another gym. I've probably always held 2 to 4 different memberships at a time just because I like different training environments and stuff. So
right.
this is a gym that actually I'd been at for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So probably a good, at least a decade. And, so I was training there at, actually you'll like this. At the time, I forget where it was end of, 2020, right? November, 2020. So COVID hysteria through the roof. Right. And, so I asked Sam to spot me and I could tell that she wasn't someone else wearing a mask in the gym. So I was like, nice. Okay. good first step. So then I'm like, okay, this is good. Cause a lot of people would come spot you and be like, do you want me to put a mask on or whatever? And I'm
and
immediately I'm like, okay, so you're a considerate person, but you're probably not thinking the way I do. Cause anyone would ask me to spot, I just never put it on. I'm like,
right.
I'm just going to spot you like it's July of 1983, dude.
I'm just going to raw dog this air around you, man.
Yeah.
I also though, I was like days after. So they had canceled. I had done a whole competition prep and they canceled the show one day out. I was shredded and scary too. I was like quite intimidating looking right at that point because it was just after and I had probably like just eaten
sushi
like,
or something.
Some sushi, and I was like,
yeah. So. Yeah, she looked great at that. Yeah, she looked really good then. You look great now too, Benny. but yeah, so actually it's funny. I'll throw this in here because that, so she helped me with my bench, right? And then I was hitting a top single. And then right after, it's funny because we still have video of it because I was recording my training at the time. And she goes, are you prepping for a competition? And at that point, I hadn't competed at all. I hadn't done any powerlifting, but I wanted to. And I was like, no, not yet, whatever. And then that quickly turned into like, oh, I have a training studio slash gym, you know, you could call it. And then she goes, you're not going to close down, are you? And she says now that she's like, I was really just teasing it out to see if I had a place where I could go train if they closed right, the gyms
right.
again.
Right, right. Nice. So, no, nice. Yeah. Okay. You could see, I mean, the lack of a mask was kind of like the plumage of a peacock saying that advertising, these are my values almost, hey? Mm-hmm. And so you guys just kind of hit it off from there. And have you, what does a life of a fitness power couple look like? Like, are you training together constantly or do you like keep that separate? Like I'm doing my training over here. You do your training over here. Yeah. We'll meet. Yeah.
We train so differently.
Right.
So differently that, yeah.
Yeah. We don't train. We trained
once yesterday.
We trained yesterday together, but, just for, a vlog that we want to, we're going to put up some lifestyle vlogs and we want some training footage in there. So we had our producer come by and film at the gym. Right. So we were training together for that. And so, you know, we do what we got to do, but we usually just train separately.
Yeah. When I'm bodybuilding prep, I'm like, it has to be what I want to do on this certain day. Like everything is so specific, right. And I'm not then at that point really doing the power lifts, right? Or if I am, it's, you know, sets of 10 to 12, not sets of 5 or whatever, right? So
right.
For him, like bench will take you like 45 minutes alone or squat or
sometimes
whatever, right?
So it's we go at the same time, but she also is doing 2-a-days right now, which is a new thing for her prep. So she's going to the gym twice a day. So, and her rest days are different than mine. Like I have a 5-day split. And
no, our rest days are the same.
Are they aligned? Monday, Thursday?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. So Sam, when is your next competition? You said you're in prep right now.
Yeah. It's June 8th. So I'm just under 11 weeks.
11 weeks. Okay. So you're into prep already and you're doing 2-a-days. And what does prep look like to us normies here? I'm curious, like, are you?
It looks like you're hungry a lot.
Yeah.
The hardest part's the diet, right? I love the training. And now that I'm working for myself fully online, I have the privilege to be able to go weight train twice a day, which is super fun. So I didn't, it's a slight volume increase, but it's more so just splitting up. So say you were to do a pull day, it's like now I'm doing back in the morning and biceps.
Gotcha. So you're spreading that one big workout over two smaller workouts.
Kind exactly. Of. Spreading it and then allowing for time during each session to get cardio in instead of like being there for, you know, hours doing one long cardio session.
Right.
It's just been working overall for, you know, energy expenditure and
It's
burning calories.
And like, just, I know that you get into the nitty gritty on, I specifically, I hadn't heard your show before, Tim, but I did listen to your episode on, your fitness journey in regards to the 75 hard.
Yeah.
So I know that you get into the nitty gritty on some stuff too, the finer details of this stuff. And I know that like for her specifically, splitting it up jacks up her knee big time. So she has the fitness, but like walking in between stations, if you do two sessions, you're going to have more of those steps, you know?
So I've been tracking steps.
Right.
And then when it comes to the diet, I can tell you every single gram of everything entering my body, everything's weighed, to the gram. I don't like measuring. I don't use like.
And how big of a calorie deficit do you go on in a?
I'm a quite contest. Big right now.
It's aggressive. Okay. It's aggressive.
Aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
You think it won't work for everyone, but I do.
How big do you think the deficit is?
Oh, geez, like it's just a lot. Like my low days right now are 1,300 calories. Wow. I'll get down to. Last year I got down to sub 1,000.
Yeah, like her deficit's probably 1,000 calories plus.
We have to keep into account though, I'm not a natural bodybuilder.
Gotcha.
So you can get away with
you can hold on to that muscle a little bit easier.
Exactly.
You're not going to have the negative hormonal effects as much. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, like I won't just all of a sudden become catabolic.
No.
Because I have stuff preventing that.
Yeah, so yeah.
You can really push. Because ideally in the division I do, you want to be like see-through on stage.
Right.
Right. Like you want to be so lean that you can see every single muscle. And
I'm going to add a bit there too, just on your initial question, Tim, because people might also find it interesting kind of just from my perspective on what it looks like, you know, for the normies, what does it look like for someone who's a high level competitive bodybuilder during prep? And so she talked a bit about kind of her fitness setup, like the actual nutrition and fitness in regards to that. But there's a large, from the social perspective / lifestyle perspective, it's extremely like very regimented. So there's that. But it's also, lack of a better term, very boring, which I think I'm okay with. But a lot of people, I think, struggle with that side of it because it's not. Yeah. You know, since she's going from mid-November prepping, starting then until June 8th. And it's like, you know, she did really well over the Christmas holidays and stuff, still enjoying family stuff. But
I
there's
started early so that I could eat at our wedding.
Yeah, right. Be set up for it.
I had to set up so right. I could, you know, enjoy. We enjoyed the wedding day and the day after. I like took a full diet break and just. We went out for breakfast the next day and all that stuff.
But I think there's something that like a lot of people, we talk about this a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think, and we talked about it on the podcast a little bit as well, but it's always interesting talking to like friends and close friends eventually get it, but you usually have to explain it quite a bit where from the perspective of like, oh, why can't you just come for dinner, but not eat? Like those types of things. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's like what she's going through, this is voluntary, obviously, but it's like what she is choosing to go through. There's only so much bandwidth that she can kind of give out, you know? So to be like, I don't have that energy to go do X, Y, and Z.
Just to even talk.
You'd be present. Yeah. Socially.
I have the energy. Psychological fatigue kind of.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I have the energy to train twice a day. And it only gets worse. It's starting around right now.
Starting now. Yeah.
Right? Like even I bet you even after this interaction, I'll go train and like that I'll be.
You'll be tanked.
Like I will not be.
That'll be.
And I'm going to get, fine. I'm going to get more energy from this conversation.
Right.
Because I'm usually extrovert, but it's like when you physically don't have the actual calories in you to fuel you.
Yeah.
Like the emotional exchange is a lot too, right? Mm-hmm. So,
and I think I saw there's an episode where you talk about how you actually left him, and was that I think that was during a prep. You were in a deficit, and you were kind of going through the same thing. So, can you talk a little bit about how you manage that? I mean, this is an extreme thing you're doing, and you've got a goal, and you're competitive, and you're making a lot of trade-offs to make it happen. And obviously I think that the moral of that episode was that it wasn't Tim's fault or something like that. It raised your self-awareness that I'm going through this. And so maybe talk, I don't know where I'm going with this, but maybe talk a little bit about how that affects your relationship or what lessons you bring to the relationship now as you go through these preps.
So if you date a competitor,
they most likely won't break up with you. Okay. Right.
But they might.
We had issues. We had our own issues that obviously were never fully on. that got amplified, especially right. for me during that, right? I had my own issues that all of a sudden were extremely amplified from this pressure cooker situation I put myself in. So yeah, it felt like, you know, the top geysered off and everything came out where to the point where, yes, I left. He still supported me through the show. After the show, we were able to get, you know, get together to actually communicate and deal with our issues, and went to counseling for that as well. That was very important for us. Christian based counseling that we're going to use those skills we learned for our whole marriage.
You could almost say that it put you it exposed those things or brought them to the surface for you to deal with, right? And my wife and I actually went through something similar. She competed in a bikini class competition a few years ago. It's kind of like a bucket list thing for her. She's always been
cool
in the gym, and you know, and just wanted to try it once, and she did. And you know, I got a taste of what it was like to live with someone in a severe calorie deficit, focused on a singular goal, and it exposed, you know, certainly things that annoyed her before that she would kind of let go were you know, coming up, bubbling up a lot more, right? So it definitely made us alert to, you know, unconscious narratives we have in our own head, especially for her. And I'm finding it a little bit now because I'm doing a bit of a deficit. We're going to Puerto Vallarta in 3 weeks now. And so I've been in maybe 750 calories a day for the last 4 or 5 weeks. Got 3 weeks left. And so, yeah, I've noticed things, you know, annoying the fuck out of me. It's kind of surprising, some of the things. But
right. Well, it's even, funny. Well, you even like, sorry, go ahead.
This cute little dog, okay?
Right.
This cute little thing.
Oh, yeah.
She's even annoying me sometimes now. It's like she's not even doing anything. She's just living her life.
Yeah. Well, I was going to bring up my dog, actually. He's a cute little thing, too. And I'm like, right. Why am I so angry at you right now? What is this?
It's funny. I was going to say, too, it's funny what you said there, where it's like it exposes some subconscious narratives, which is a great way to say it. Because like my version of basically of wording that in the past, when I reflected back on that event, was bodybuilding prep is a really good tool because it's in a way because
or a very strict diet, even like
or a very strict diet. But regardless, like because you're going through a competitive bodybuilding prep, it's like that ended up being a very good filter for those subconscious narratives that you're talking about. And we were doing some filming after the gym or before the gym yesterday with our producer for, do we share that? What you're filming?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. She's filming a documentary.
Year three.
Yeah. So
we're filming until I go pro.
Road to the pro. Yeah. Cool. So we were filming on that. We were chatting about that, about how much, just like it like what you said, it exposes those subconscious narratives. But I was talking to Alex about this yesterday, how much do you remember how much we celebrated? We championed each other, just like high five. We're like, yeah, we communicate all the time. We're awesome. We're a good couple. We communicate.
Yeah, we're,
you know, and then not, you know, and we laugh now looking back, and it's like, what matters is not that you're communicating. It's like, what are you communicating?
Yeah,
like, and we clearly were not. We weren't aware that what we were talking about was not reflective of our own hearts. So then when we communicated, it didn't matter what the words were because they weren't true reflections of what was going on inside. And then that event actually, it forced us to be like, hey, we have to examine that for ourselves and then be willing to share that with each other to move forward here.
And it was, you know, as much as obviously the moment was hard, it was good because it kind of sped up what could have, like, over a long time of marriage just crumbled down slowly.
Right.
Kind of like, no, let's just boom.
Yeah, deal I with mean, it's just hovering there under the surface and never really get addressed. You just kind of push it down a little bit. It's not that big a deal. You just kind of dismiss it. But over time, it it builds and kind of calcifies the connections in your relationship, right? I totally relate to that. My wife and I, we read this book called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. And this is a guy that has kind of enjoyed some popularity in libertarian circles years ago because his philosophy is around communication and relationship kind of overlaps libertarian philosophy a little bit in that it's all about kind of radical self-ownership of what's of your own feelings. It's kind of stoic in that way. And also it's all about not trying to put the other person on the defensive, not using aggressive or attacking language, right? And so, you know, he says anytime that there's some conflict or negative feelings in a relationship, well, let's take the classic couple fight over the position of the toilet seat as an example, right? She comes to me because I left the toilet seat up and is angry. Is she angry about the position of the toilet seat? No, that if we were to start arguing, though, you would think that's what is really driving this. So there's arguments on both sides about what position that toilet seat should be in, what's most logical, what's, you know, and of course, the actual part of the problem never gets addressed. And that is that negative feeling she's having is because she has an unmet need that she hasn't recognized. And that unmet, and so part of healthy relationship and communication is, okay, let's go past the surface stuff. And what's that unmet need? Oh, it's probably you need to feel considered. And is there ways I, as a husband, can help you feel more considered? You know, maybe it's I'm not going to be 100% on the toilet seat, but maybe I can make you feel considered in other ways and do things that meet that need for you or something like that. And so that book was really a game changer for us because it stopped us kind of blaming each other for you hurt my feelings. No, you didn't. You said something. And then I had some negative feelings, but that's not your fault. I'm having those negative feelings. So let's explore what this unmet need in me is, kind of thing. And so it was just a really cool way of switching it. So, okay. There's some other stuff I wanted to talk with you, but I have some selfish requests. I'm going to hit you up for some free consultation.
Oh yeah.
To have you on my podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Do it.
But, I wanted to talk about a few things. One is we see out there a few different movements. There's this like radical fat acceptance. There's body positivity. There's dysmorphia. What is the correct way to look at yourself in the mirror? Is it to radically accept your blemishes? Is it to make a mountain out of a molehill, as in a dysmorphic person? What should I be thinking about when I look in the mirror? What's the right attitudinal disposition?
So my take on that is I think a lot of people on both ends of the spectrum in regards to that issue, I think they get it wrong. And I think where they get it wrong is they are conflating the fact that I may not like a certain part of myself with not liking myself at all. And that's right. That's the problem. If you go back to the root, you know, it's just like, I think that's what gets lost in translation when people have opinions about this or they argue about it, because I would look at it like there's, as far as a human being, who's 400 plus pounds, and I've worked with many of them, and many of them become good friends of mine. They were never and are never any less valuable as a human being, but they do have aspects that is in the power of them to change, and they can change that. And I would argue they should. And it's okay if they don't like that part about them. But I think remembering that that is not you, it's just a part of you, and you can change that. I think that's where people get that mixed up.
Right.
I agree. And to go off on that too, I think that these things exist at all because people compare themselves to other people, right? So Who's to say you're to look in the mirror and like expect yourself to have an eight pack because you saw on the cover of a magazine a fitness model that you're like, oh, I like that. And then you look in the mirror and you don't see that and you're like, oh, and then it leads to body dysmorphia and all that stuff, right? So it's very important to know that your body is the only thing you can compare yourself to. So that's why it's very important for yourself to take progress pictures, right? So you can, I just had a client, you know, she was struggling. She was seeing other bikini chicks on Instagram and she's like, she's already so shredded. I'm doing the same show. Why is she so shredded? And I'm not shredded yet, even though she is lean, right? And so then she compared a picture of herself from like 6 weeks ago. And then that's a real comparison because now that's your body, right? And now you are a lot leaner. And then it does kind of give you that good feeling that what you're doing is working and all that stuff. So so I don't think that there's right or wrong. And to go off Tim's though too, like if you're seeing things and you know that you have in your control to change them to be better, right? You want to look more fit, that's in your control, then you should, right? And it doesn't mean, yeah, you're any less of a person, but it's like you're totally allowed to want to look better and feel better. And you don't have to, you know, tell yourself that fat is beautiful and fat is healthy because the data shows that it's not.
Well, I was going to say, we should come right out and say it's like that movement we believe is 100% harmful.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you do too. It's completely enabling harmful behavior.
The top influencers in it keep dying too. So, that, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. You sound unreal, right? Where it's like dead.
Yeah, it's not good. And I get what their message is, which is why I gave the answer that I said earlier. It's like, I know what their message is, which are like, hey, you're not a bad person. There's just something about you would like to change. And if you can separate those two, which I think some people just have a hard time doing, then you're going to be able to do that. Like I just, to give a personal example, it's like, I kind of had that. It's like, to describe what I just went through, I've been bulking up until mid-November. I've been bulking and pushing calories to the heaviest I've ever got, up to 215 pounds. And I've been doing it for somewhere around a year and a half. And I'd never really done that before. So I told myself, I'm going to commit. You know, I'm naturally a smaller frame, naturally a skinnier guy. So for me, the biggest advantage I have is to be more aggressive with calories than the other way. So I said, let's push it here and let's go. Because I also have confidence that I know how to diet very effectively. So worst case scenario, I get a little chunkier than I want. I diet down. Like I'm not worried about that. So I push that. And then, you know, mid-November rolls around and I'm like, I was really struggling mentally with like my training, physically with my everything. Like I was like, I'm losing love for the gym and I never have. So I'm like that raised a lot of anxiety. Cause I'm like this, no matter what happens in my life, the gym is kind of a bulwark of safety. Like I need to have that thing. So having that feeling that like my clients would tell me where they're like, hey, I'm newer to fitness. I'm dreading the gym. You know, I'm used to working with people like that. But then when I started feeling that, I was like, for the first time in my life, at 32 years old, I'm like, oh no. You know what I mean? I'm like, this scares me. So then, and then I said, okay, and I was having a lot of depressive episodes at that time too. And I was like, you know what I need to do here? I need a diet. I don't like how I look. I don't like how I feel. And those are connected. I don't like how I feel when I look at myself. I don't like how I feel in general. And I feel like I've lost a bit of control around that. So I'm going to diet. I'm going to regain control of that. And I'm going to change how I look, because how I look, this is where a lot of people, I think, like an easy target sometimes of people that are like pro positivity movement will be like, everything's vanity, you know, that anything fitness is vanity. When it's like, no, this is one thing I love about fitness is it's we're visual creatures. So like, I can see you, you know, and then I make judgments off that, and we're meant to do that. And when I see someone who has built up a physique, I go, oh, cool. They could have taken different drugs or different training methods or had better parents than me or different genetics. And like, all those things are true. Life isn't fair, but they still had to do something to get there, and they had to do it consistently. So I know no matter what route they took, that like their physique is reflective or a reflection of the steps that they've taken. You know what I mean? Right. So like, I know that person is embodies some certain values for sure. So it's deeper than just the vanity of, you know, getting a six pack or whatever. It's what the six pack means, if just using that as an example, you know?
Right. So, well, yes. And this is something I've told my daughters over and over again is please judge books by their cover. That's literally what covers are for. They're conscious choices that authors make so you can decide whether to buy them. I mean, that doesn't mean you dismiss it and like call it trash or whatever.
Right.
But you have a certain amount of time in your day, a certain amount of bandwidth, a certain amount of energy you can focus. And the covers people wear tell you, help you triage which ones to focus on and which ones to that you can probably dismiss out of hand. And I mean, the way people dress, the way they carry themselves, the way they look, all these things are conscious decisions or subconscious decisions that that are them literally advertising who they are as a person. And it's almost disrespectful to ignore that and say, well, I have to ignore all that, all the conscious, the accumulation of conscious decisions you made there because society tells me I shouldn't judge. Well, no.
Right.
You absolutely should to some extent. Right. It's interesting. You're talking about ebbs and flows. So you went into like a conscious kind of bulking phase and then started losing motivation. I've noticed that that people in the fitness world, they'll do that, right? They'll do the bulk and then the cut. And that, you know, part of that's a strategy for building muscle and then retaining it during the cut, building it, retaining it. It seems like if you, especially if you're looking at magazines and anything in Instagram, everyone's always peaked. They're always like, you know, shredded and you kind of get the sense that people just walk around like that. Right. And even myself, I've noticed, you know, so I did the 75 hard and I lost, I don't know, I think about 20 pounds and started looking pretty good. And then I decided to go on a little bit of a bulk and put on 5 or 10 pounds over the next month and a half or so. And, I was never satisfied, right? I was either, and even now I'm getting lean and I'm like, man, you're too skinny almost. But also I want to, you know, see striations and stuff. And like, I can't have it both ways. I can't be like big and bulky in a shirt and also look striated on the beach. So how do you like navigate those two worlds? You just kind of accept the phase you're in and go with it? Or?
Well, the first step is knowing that you might never be satisfied.
Right.
Right. There's no, with fitness.
And hopefully not really.
Yeah.
I just want He-Man's body. Once I get He-Man's body, I'm just going to keep it right there and then I'll be satisfied.
Yeah.
Right. But then you'll still have to work and do work to keep it there. It's not like you just get the body and get your dream physique and then you can just stop doing everything you did to get that.
Fitness is very Sisyphean by nature. Like that's what I love about it. You know, it's like it never ends. You'll never get the carrot. But if you ultimately fall in love with the process, which I know is so corny, but it's so true. It's like if you can start to love it, you do like those shifts. Like I got reinvigorated from this diet phase. And I was like, man, that's a fun ebb and flow. That was a fun phase that served me well. And now I'm excited to head into my next phase. And I'm going to go through a diet phase in the future again, too. Yeah. But I think I have learned to enjoy the process. Now I found it, to look back, I did find it challenging last fall. Like that was hard for me, you know. But also looking back, I also got a lot of lessons from that. Because now I'm like, okay, how did I get there? And reflect and see some decisions I made on how I got there and be like, okay, I would do it differently next time, you know, so that I wouldn't end up there, if that makes sense.
That's fair. But I also think though that especially in fitness and when you want to change how your body looks, there will be periods of quite severe discomfort. And that's okay.
Right.
Like you're not supposed to feel good all the time. Like you're 3 weeks out from your vacation. These next 3 weeks, like, yeah, it might be tough because you're just trying that. You got the last little push, you know, you have a specific date on it. So you know that you're going to push for it. So it's like, if you don't feel great every day, that's okay. And that's probably normal. And that probably means it's working.
It's actually probably a good indicator.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like we always say, with bodybuilding prep and stuff. And this is for divisions. Like, I'm sure your wife was like, for sure, low, like calorie deficit, and like she wasn't feeling great. As you go up in the divisions on both the men and the women's side, where they carry more muscle and they have to be leaner and stuff like that, it amplifies those. But it's like, we always say, like, the worse you feel, the better you look.
Right. So it's
like, if you wake up one morning and you're like, oh, I don't know if I can do it today, and then you go look in the mirror, you're like, wow, it's my best look.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Yeah. Right. At the end of prep, you're like, I can't go on. And then you look and you're like, wow, I got ab veins all over the place.
Yeah, you know what, too? I was just thinking, Tim, like, I could speak to the dysmorphia, because I know that you mentioned dysmorphia earlier, too. It's like, I could speak to that a little bit as well, and you might be able to, because that's like, that's so common, right? It's like, and there's so many memes making fun of it
and
on
that's
Instagram.
That's the thing too. It's like, it's also like just something you have to, it's like, you'll never, you could look in the mirror and be like, yeah, okay, I like this right now. But how reasonable is it to hold that specific look forever, especially if that look is the result of either a high caloric surplus or a deficit, right? So it's like,
right.
Your body will change, right? Especially because you're going to age and everything's going to change. So it's like just being mindful in those moments when you're looking at yourself. And if you like recognize that you're having a negative thought towards something you're seeing on your body, just recognize it.
I think
like it's all right.
Yeah.
You know.
And that is true. Easier said than done, but true nonetheless. I think, and what she's describing, what she's describing is like, ultimately comes down to expectations. It's like, I don't think any of us see ourselves purely objectively and never will, you know? Right. And that's that. And I don't even mean that from physical perspective, just in life probably, right? Our self-perception is always skewed, but from a physical perspective, we'll never see ourselves objectively. So if we can remember that, then it's easier to be like, when I feel an emotion about my body, I need to check in and ask myself, is that a reasonable way to feel right now? Because, and that's what I've been doing, because I'm at the end of my diet. So mid-November, this week was my first week off the diet. So not pushing to lose weight any further. And so that was 3 months, 4 months, 4 months, ended up being about 4 months. And I still have love handles right now. Question is like, well, how big are the love, right?
It's right, right.
But in my head they're bigger than they should be.
Yeah,
that's the body dysmorphia. So my thought process when I go through it is like, okay, that is there. Is it reasonable for me to expect something around that? If yes, then do something about it. If not, then I have to tame that beast. So like, for instance, right now I don't want to do anything about that. So I'm gonna ride into the summer where I'm at. That's my goal. But if I didn't, I can't be upset about that and continue to make choices that don't align with changing that. You know what I mean? It's like if it actually bothered me, it's like, Tim, you should just keep dieting then. Like, what are you doing just complaining in your head about it? You know, like, just keep dieting. But I don't want to keep dieting. So I gotta accept the love handles a little bit. It's like, I'm not stage lean, I'm just normie lean, and I'm okay with that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true. Because you have expectations too. Because you see me get so lean.
Well, and
subconsciously, right?
Probably. Also, a good point on that is bodies are very different. So, like for her, she gets shredded around her waist. Like her waist just is gone. You know. And what takes a long time for her is like glutes, hips, hamstrings, carries more body fat around there. Mm. So. And for me, like my legs felt like they were like getting like a couple veins in there, like pretty quick into the diet. But the waistline was like that low belly fat, which is typical for a lot of male builds. Right.
Yeah.
And it just hung around. So for me, it's like, if I want lower body fat percentage, because I want to have a cinched in waist like her, the rules apply the same to me, even though we're different genetics. It's like, I still have to just keep dieting if I really want to get rid of that.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. You know, I find, I don't know what it is. I've got this all or none attitude, right? So last night, just super like low energy, hunger cravings. And the challenge for me is I work at a fire station, and part of the culture is we cook together, we eat together, we work out together. It's a team environment. Some guys will bring their little Tupperware and be like, super clean eating and stuff, but I don't want to be that guy. So I try to, you know, just ballpark macros and stuff. But last night it was like wild game charcuterie night, and there was a bag of chips there, and chips are like my crack. It's like if I have one, I'm off the wagon, and waking up in a haze a year and a half later, having not gone to the gym with like
40 pounds
of belly fat, you know?
Yeah.
So I like mount down like half a bag, like a big bag of chips, and just felt like, you know, all the bad feelings, all the negative, you piece of shit, why'd you do that? You just ruined your cut here for the beach. Right. And, you know, and so then it was like, well, okay. And then my mind starts saying, well, why are you even getting shredded for the beach anyway? You're going to peak what, day one? And then what? Right. You're going to start drinking alcohol. You know, like you've earned all that. Like that was the plan to begin with. You're not going to be shredded the whole time. So why are you getting shredded for the one day? Like it's not going to be cameras there. It's not like, So, you know, you start playing those minds that call into question the very goal you're doing. My brain always does this. This is why I was on the couch for a year and a half before, and how I got started on 75 Hard was a friend of mine just texted me and said, hey, I'm starting 75 Hard tomorrow. Do you want to join me? And my initial reaction was, fuck you. Like, you know, like just a violent no. I didn't. And I'm like, I didn't send her a text back. And I just sat there and like struggled with this for like 2.5 hours. I'm like, why was that such a violent reaction? No, like what is going on with me? Why am I? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, I really got no, like I've been complaining about how I feel, how I look and not doing anything about it. Why aren't I doing anything about it? I realized I had no good excuse. So I just started it. And you know, it just like, I'm not the kind of guy that likes going to the gym. You know, I don't look forward to it. It's always, feels like a chore to me. But you know, that being said, I've gone to the gym every day for the last 30 days straight, and probably because I'm scared if I stop going, it's going to be for a year and a half, not just a couple of days. You know what I mean? You got any advice for your boy here?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, but it's a common one. I have two very important questions, but one that's more relevant to this conversation that's in my intake when I work with a new client. And that question is, would you describe yourself as an all or nothing person? And that question is really important. One of the most important questions on the intake, in my opinion, because it helps me understand like everything that you just described. If you were a new client of mine, I already would have known you went through that because you checked off yes on that. Yeah. And because that's how it goes. It's like if you're, the thing is, the all or nothing pushes you to be a high performer, right? I tell people it's a superpower, because sometimes people look at it they have a negative connotation about themselves because they're so extreme. And I'm like, no. It's just a tool. And it's something that you can kind of wield. As you learn to manage it, you can wield it to your own advantage, because it's something that allows you to perform at high levels if used correctly and channeled correctly. But it's also one of those things where you have a bag of chips and you think you ruined the whole cut when really you didn't.
Right.
Your head starts playing tricks, and then the all or nothing railroad, you know, train track takes you all the way to, what's even the point? Like, you know, and then it's like you probably, better term, sober-minded now, almost laugh at yourself that you would ask yourself those questions. Like, of course I want to get fit for my vacation. That's a reasonable goal. But in the moment, it's like, that seemed like such a reasonable question to ask yourself, you know? And I think that's just indicative of people that think that way. So I'm trying to think of like something practical to help, because, you know, I work with a lot of people like that, and I've been improving my skills as a coach to kind of work with people on that. Cause I'll tell you a mistake I've made in the past as a coach working with those people is since they always wanted to be more extreme, I always felt like, okay, well, my goal is to balance you out. Mm. And that's kind of true. But the problem with that is part of them. And I still believe humans can change. We can change a lot of parts about ourselves. And that is malleable just like anything else. But at the same time, that still is who they are. That is part of them that probably will adjust, but won't necessarily be a total flip. So, you know, I think working towards areas where moderation should and can be practiced is good. But at the same time, recognizing like, no, I'm kind of a little insane, and I'm pedal to the metal on some things in my life, and that's okay. You know what I mean? So I think with yours, I think ultimately thinking about that specific situation, that scenario at the fire hall, ultimately what would help you is having those self-coached questions in your head as if you're not yourself and being like, what would I tell, you know, someone else in this situation? And I'd probably ask some questions, try and be as objective as possible, being like, you know, first of all, you have to identify, hey, I feel like I threw this whole cutaway. Well, the next step is like, why do I feel like I threw it all away? And also, is that appropriate to feel that way? Because did I actually throw it away? Is that true? Or am I just believing a narrative I'm deciding to believe?
Right. And that's actually a really good advice because that's pretty much what helped me. I'm helping a guy right now who started at over 300 pounds. He's lost about 20 pounds so far, but he was beating himself up because he went out with his friend. Okay. He planned for it. He knew he was going to eat more calories. So he did exactly what he should have. He planned for it, had less calories throughout the day, you know, and, you know, he felt like he derailed himself. And I'm like, let's do the math here. I mean, you actually didn't eat a calorie surplus. Like you ate your maintenance calories. I mean, you didn't even, so, you know, you might've not lost a quarter pound that you otherwise would have lost, but you're still on track.
Yeah.
And I remembered that conversation. I'm like, yeah, no, I, this is, you know,
yeah,
it's that's just good. The psychological, cause I'm also all or nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
Very hard, all or nothing. So, I don't like gray area at all. I love black and white. And, you know, if I'm doing this for prep, I'm doing it. So it's like, I understand exactly how you felt in that moment because you felt like you were giving it all and now it's for nothing because it's like, well, I just destroyed it. Right. And I've dealt with that too, where he's had to like, you know, bring me down from 11 because I'm sitting there at, you know, at max volume, like, because that's where I go because it's part of my personality. And you have to, it's just about the reassurance over and over. And I like what you did with the guy you're helping with the numbers, like actually seeing the numbers. And you're like, oh, okay, like there's data here to show that I didn't mess it up. And that helps as well, right? And then it's just time, right? Then you're just like, all right, I'm going right back to the plan. And then you kind of forget about it and you go on, right?
Well, something I would add to that too, Tim, is specific, like conversations that come up with me a lot with clients like this. And I had a conversation like this with a client actually right before this call, or right before we're having this conversation here. And he went out for, it was lunch right before this. He's away with his family and he's still a newer client. So he's kind of getting an idea of my philosophies on things and stuff, which are quite unconventional from a lot of other fitness coaches. And He ordered a burger and a salad, I think, on the side, and out at a restaurant. And I told him the way that he'd ordered it, which I won't say specifically because there's a million ways you can do it based on the context of whatever. But the way he ordered it, when he sent it to me, he sent me a photo of the meal and he told me how he ordered it. And I said, oh, this is one of the best ways to do this. Awesome. Very happy with this. Well played. And he was like, wait, what? Seriously? I think he was waiting for me to go, come on, man, you screwed it up. You know, you ordered a burger at a restaurant. We're trying to get fit here, dude. that wasn't the approach I took because, you know, I'll use like a hypothetical client in this scenario. It's like, you could look at what you did, which was great, where it's like, let's look at the hard numbers here, right? That helps to put, especially for more like pragmatic thinkers that like data and stuff. It's like that helps them. And then the other one is also looking at other metrics of progress, being like, okay, well, usually you got the bacon and the cheese. You didn't even get that on it this time. Usually you'd order fries, so you didn't even do that. Usually order a pop or a beer, so you got water with it. And usually you get an appetizer and you didn't even get out. So there's like a lot of like things you can point to that, you know what I mean? Or even planning ahead. It's like you knew this was coming and you planned ahead. So I know that you got your steps in before this because you knew this was coming. That's another one, right? Or actually a good example that you could use for you with the chips is like, so a conversation I would have, if you were my client that's in that scenario, I'd go, did you finish the bag of chips? And you go, yeah. I'd be like, okay, our goal now is to, in the future, is to deliberately and intentionally partake in chips. Just do it deliberately. Because if you do that and it's not mindless, you'll probably find out the decision's easier because you give yourself time and space to think about it first. And then what happens is you pour out a handful and you put it in a bowl and then you enjoy it. And then you're like, oh yeah, usually I would have just crushed the whole bag of chips. So it's like, no, it's you are able to control yourself more than you think, you know, historically.
You know what's funny is during 75 hard, when I was having like severe cravings, my wife had a Christmas party over at our place while I was working night shift. I came home in the morning and there was this big bowl of chips there and I had one. And then I'm like, you know what? I could see the appeal to being bulimic right now. Cause I want to just eat this whole thing. And if I have to, I'll fucking puke it up afterwards.
I like what
you said there about being intentional about eating it. I'm actually going to try that because my wife brought a bag of my favorite chips home from the grocery store. The other day. It's sitting there tempting me. Right. And it's like, okay, this is an opportunity for me to make that bag of chips my bitch and show it that I'm stronger than it mentally. Right. But I think I might do that. You know, I might just pour myself a little bowl of it and eat that and put the rest in there and just see if,
that'll be hard for you because you are an all or nothing person. So it's an area that's gray because it's like, it like what she said, it's like as an all or nothing person, you love the binary. So the space in between is uncomfortable, but if we can spend some time there, it can be helpful for the long-term strategies around eating healthy, maintaining a healthy body, body composition, but also enjoying the pleasures of life, which food is meant to be that.
Right.
For me, it's not chips. It's chocolate covered almonds. Crack.
We may or may not have, but this is
the point.
So
like I will deliberately keep a bag of it in the cupboard, all prep. Just to prove, like, I will not touch it. I will not, because obviously it's not fitting in my, because I have to be stage lean. I will keep it there to prove to myself, A, it's not going anywhere. It will be there when I'm done, this diet, right? The food is never, right? And then B, it's like, I have that control not to go open the bag. So it's like, I prove to myself, I can do it. I can have the control. And B, it's like, the food is not going anywhere. So your favorite chips, you know, unless they discontinue them, you know, likely going to be there. So that's like my way of thinking, just because I have to bring my diet to such an extreme place.
Right.
But, you know, after bodybuilding, which I have to start thinking about relatively soon, we want to have a family, right?
Mm.
It's like, yes, I'm going to have to, it's going to be uncomfortable, right? Because I'm going through change, but I'm going to have to learn that skill of like, hey, I can go have like 10 of those and seal the bag, right? And put it back.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about 10 bags. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You can have 10. Sam, I got a question for you. What's your favorite, I guess, is there any foods you have as a treat while you're on prep or that help satisfy the craving? Or is it just strictly like chicken and broccoli kind of thing?
No, not strictly chicken and broccoli. I do a lot of salmon, egg whites, ground chicken and turkey. What else do I eat?
You say rice cakes? You do a lot of rice. You've been doing Brussels sprouts for your veggie a lot.
Yeah, so like the food is very good, right? And I love what I eat. I don't eat anything I don't want to eat. So I don't really like chicken breast right now, so I'm not going to make myself eat that. There's no magic. Like, obviously, there's still single ingredient foods, so they're all good for you and whatever digests well for me and stuff like that. So I usually am loving what I'm eating. It's just like I want like this times 20.
I
want the portion to be massive, right? Like, and this is like the more you
prep I found for myself. It's like, at the end, it's like, I don't even want like baked goods or whatever. I want like a massive bowl of oatmeal.
Right.
Like, I just want to feel full, you know, it doesn't even matter what it is. Right. So it's like, so early in prep, like I'll keep certain things in, but this close to the show, I'll usually just cut it, but I do enjoy everything I eat. It just comes down to a portion issue for me.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you, because I see these anabolic cookbooks. I think Greg Doucette's got one, Remington James, a bunch of these fitfluencers, they kind of have their own cookbooks. A lot of the stuff looks good. I got one of those Ninja Creamies.
Yeah, I have
a few
it.
Weeks ago. Oh my God, it's a game changer. I just had a pint of ice cream that was like 300 calories and 55 grams of protein. And it felt like cheat mode for me, right? So I was wondering if you had any other hacks like that. The other thing I've gotten is into is, because chips are my thing, is those Quest protein chips. And so I kind of satisfy that craving with some of those. So I was wondering if
air fryer is a huge hack.
Get yourself like your own potato, slice it up nice and thin, and air fry it.
Air fry potato, okay.
Right, because then it's better. Like, you'll get to choose the oil you use, which is going to be a better option if you use a, you know, better oil than what they use.
And the amount, right?
And the amount, right? So that's a good hack.
Air fryer is a huge hack.
Get the Ninja air fryer to go with your Ninja Creamy. Cool. I'm a huge Ninja fan now.
All right. But
sponsored by Ninja.
I was doing the creamies. I only just cut them out now just for me, because as I get closer, I like to just cut dairy out.
Mm.
Just because I find that, you know, sometimes can be a little funky. So I like to just take it out altogether. But yeah, all summer long, I'm doing creamies all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. How should I peak for the beach? Like, if that's my stage, I'm stepping onto that stage, first day in Puerto Vallarta. How can I look my best?
So I wouldn't do anything crazy. I would just do. So what day are you flying out?
We're flying out on April 10th. So I think we get there late April 10th. So I don't know, I'll probably be there.
The 11th.
Probably, yeah.
Okay. Well, let me see what day of the week. Let's see. April 11th. Okay, so you're flying out the Wednesday.
Yeah.
So on Monday that week, I would double your carbs.
Okay.
Okay. Don't keep them clean, but double them.
Right.
And then I would go right back to your normal diet on the 9th and the 10th, right?
Okay.
Keeping salt the same. And then do you know how much water you're drinking every day?
I drink about one of those, I think it's a gallon, 2 liters, 2 liter things.
Plus. Liters?
Yeah, I don't really have, I'm not really, don't have a set amount.
That's a goal you can have. So from now on, let's say have 3 liters a day.
Okay.
Okay. Every single day.
Right.
On the 10th, on the travel day.
Yeah.
Drop that down to 2 or 1.5.
Okay.
Okay. And then when you wake up on the 11th, have yourself a really nice breakfast, like a nice carb, fat heavy breakfast. You're going to be on the beach.
Perfect. Okay. And then hit the gym real quick, get a pump on.
Yeah. Get a quick pump. Yeah. And then.
All right.
You're going with your family?
Just me and my wife, so I'll get have her
gonna,
get camera ready.
She's going to be the photographer.
Gotcha.
And you're going to take a lot of pictures.
Okay. So double my carbs on that Monday, and I guess that just fills my muscles up.
So it's called front loading. So you front load the carbs, because if you look a little watery on the 9th, you have the 9th and 10th for your body to flush it out a little bit.
Gotcha.
Right. And because you could wake up on the 9th and be like, maybe you're even more shredded. Maybe you needed the refeed. So then you can kind of play around with it a bit, like, oh, maybe I need a little more. I just like to tell, since it's, you know, to be safe, because you could convince yourself you need more. I just tell people, go right back to what you were eating. Don't eat any less or anything. Yeah. Some people like to slightly increase fats those 2 days because it helps hold the glycogen in the muscles.
Right.
But the slight dehydration you're going to do on the 10th to the 11th, and then having a nice carb fat heavy breakfast that day, like it's
like essentially a diner breakfast.
Yeah. Well, whatever is going to be at the resort.
Eggs and bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like pancakes.
Yeah.
Bacon, eggs. Like enjoy it. That's
Right.
Cool.
Yeah.
And Tim, if I were to compete in powerlifting, how do you peak for powerlifting? I'm guessing it's a little different. You're not probably cutting calories and dieting down. You're probably doing the exact opposite, or?
Yeah, so good question. So be with powerlifting, and for anyone who's listening or watching that wouldn't know, powerlifting is a one rep max test of your squat, your bench, and your deadlift. And that is primarily and essentially solely a performance goal. So how you look does not matter to the extent that how much you weigh matters, but that still doesn't matter what you look like. So there's weight classes, but beyond that, it doesn't matter what you look like. You need to perform on that day. So what you need to manipulate in that regard is stuff that actually affects your fitness. And you're in this case, you know, fitness is a very general term, but in the powerlifting sense, fitness would be equated to strength outcomes or strength performance. So basically, I can kind of describe what that would look like. So if I'm competing 12 weeks from now, I start my prep tomorrow, Monday. And what that would look like is I would have some type of training block until 4 weeks out. This is just like an example.
Right.
4 weeks out, I would probably start pushing my intensity a lot more aggressively, particularly with singles usually on the main lifts. So squat, bench, and deadlift.
Right.
I would want those to taper up in intensity. So I want to get to the point where I'm having a, you know, pretty much an all out or at least an at 9 RPE with one rep left in the tank type of thing on my squat, bench, and my deadlift for a single. And then that would probably be, depending on the person, that's around 2 weeks out, maybe 3 weeks out for really heavy deadlifters or people that get fatigued really easily from heavy squats or something like that. But then you have around a couple weeks left, a week and a half left until the competition. Basically, what happens in that 7 to 14 day period is what you do is you have two primary variables when it comes to strength training, right? You have intensity and you have volume. And there's a lot of other variables as well, but these are the two that we manipulate primarily in regards to peaking. So what you want to do is, as what I just described, is you're going to see basically like you're going to see your fatigue track upwards just in general. So this is local fatigue, global fatigue. This is your nervous system. Everything's getting fatigued, just generally more fatigued with time. And that's going to track higher right up until that 7 to 10 day window out from the competition. You should see your fitness also track upwards ideally, but then you see it peter off. Mm. Now that why that happens is because there's something well known in the strength industry and how our body works in regards to what basically it is fatigue will mask fitness. So you may have had this in the past where you're like, man, I feel like crap. I feel fatigued. I feel tired. And what I've seen you hit a 405 deadlift in the past. I'm not sure if you've hit it since or if you've gone surpassed that, but I remember seeing that a while back.
Yeah, I was doing reps of 5 this morning.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah.
405 for 5?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, as an aside, back in the day, that's when I would have friended you, was on my libertarian pipeline, you know, and I think I saw that video and I was like, I think this guy must be the strongest federal party leader that we've ever had, as far as I know, you know, this is important.
That's could be, yeah. that's the goal. That's the goal.
Or yeah.
That should be a prerequisite.
I mean, it matters to me, you know.
If they can't deadlift 405, they can't run a country.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, Jagmeet's on your way. He can deadlift 3 plates, so that's not, you know, not good, but... But anyway, so the idea is fitness or fatigue masks fitness. So since fatigue is climbing, your fitness will peter off. Right. But we want fitness to come up. So what we do is in that last 7 to 10 days, we pull back intensity and volume just a little bit, enough that the fatigue comes down and the fitness can spike. That's called supercompensation. That's what that principle is called. And that's what happens. So if you do it correctly, you get a really good supercompensation effect. And what would happen is you go into the meet feeling reasonably fresh and feeling, you know, not a lot of lingering fatigue. So that fatigue dissipates each day. And you can go in and you can, that's what that peak is basically at the top of that super compensation curve. That's what you're looking to do. So right. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me because it feels like whenever I hit a plateau, I kind of do a deload week and then it seems like, yep. I could break through that plateau within a week or two after that deload.
Exactly. Yep. That's the idea. And once you understand that, like you would utilize that concept in your training, like you would, that is part of what a deload is manipulating, is you're manipulating that concept of you're manipulating the relationship of fitness to fatigue constantly throughout training, because if fatigue's too high, your body won't adapt and it won't get stronger and you'll actually continue to get weaker. But if you can kind of ride that line of fitness and fatigue, your fitness keeps climbing while fatigue kind of stays managed. And then the only reason someone would need a deload responsibly would be if fatigue outpaces fitness for too far too long, and then you go, okay, I'm carrying some obvious fatigue here that's not dissipating, so I gotta deload and then ramp back up again.
Right Awesome. Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, well, that's a lot of great I've kept you guys over an hour, Sam. You're in the middle of a contest prep. I won't keep you any longer. You guys have been very open. Appreciate you guys coming on and dropping some knowledge on us and letting us in on some insight on the fitness industry. How can people who might want coaching or support with fitness reach out to you guys and get that?
So if someone wanted to reach out to myself, you could find me on Instagram at @Tim_MSHC. Or you could just go to my website, which is Valeo, VALEO, fitness coaching. Yeah, this guy right here.
They can hire you as a coach through there. You do online coaching, you said, right?
Yep.
And your focus is on, like, I know Sam's is like contest prep, kind of a certain niche. What's your,
mine,
you take all comers or?
Yeah, mine's mostly like, there's a lot of people that are newer to fitness. A lot of folks that are newer to fitness, and there's a lot of folks that are, you know, usually later 30s into their early 50s that have been gym goers for a while, but they've been kind of running through the reps and not seeing much change. And, and a lot of those, there's a good chunk of those that are overweight. So I take a kind of a more psycho-emotional approach to fat loss specifically. A lot of the people I work with do have fat loss goals, and they've typically tried a lot of different diets. And, you know, I always tell people those diets are.
Sorry, Tim, you mentioned you don't do you're not counting calories and stuff when you take a different approach. Can you briefly describe what that approach is for people?
Yeah, 100%. So part of my coaching initially for folks is not, there's no counting calories, there's no excessive cardio, it's not endless hours in the gym, it's not endless hours meal prepping, it's honestly no fasting, it's honestly I don't think I utilize really any typical strategies that are common with folks, which can be hard for people to get their head around when they're so used to just yo-yo dieting over and over again, which are essentially just similar diets with different wrappers usually. And the problem with that is a lot of folks look externally to these diets to fix them, when really why they can't manage their weight appropriately is it all comes down to like self-belief stuff, limiting self-beliefs, beliefs of themselves and what they deserve or what they don't deserve, and actually their habits around food. You know, a good example is what I went through with you on the chips and stuff, like working with people who are more extreme by nature and helping people kind of work through that. I call it kind of the root cause in a sense, where it's like, I think people look externally for help in regards to dieting. So it's like, if I just follow these rules, I'll be leaner and I'll lose fat. But the problem is, what happens when you stop following those rules of that diet? You know, even if it does work for you, how does this translate into enjoying a night out with your wife or your family or your friends, or going out for wings and beer with your buddies after frisbee tournament or whatever your thing is? You know what I mean? So I think I take a very holistic approach in that sense. So it's a lot of habit based and behavior based stuff.
Nice. Okay.
Mine is completely different.
Yeah.
So my business is totally different from Tim's. It's called the Slay Team. They can reach me on Instagram at SlaysFit or SlaysFit.com. It is mostly, I do have clients that don't compete. But they do like kind of that more strict, just tell me exactly what to do. I want to follow it kind of vibe.
They have a singular focus goal kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Like, I have some moms that are like, just tell me, because I don't have time to think. Just like literally give me my meals. I want to lose weight. Just tell me kind of thing. So they like that style. That would be a good transition after to go to Tim after that, to kind of transition them out of like being so strict. Cause it is like quite a specific diet. But people don't want to compete. I have clients now that just started with me, but they don't want to compete till like 2026 because they want to make a bunch of improvements first, but they know that that's their end goal. So they're starting with me early so we can, you know, learn what works best and all that stuff, or put on quality muscle and stuff like that. So, I love it. I love helping people do what I love. So.
Well, it definitely shows in your guys' generosity and sharing information on the podcast. Once again, guys, that's a Stay Peaked podcast. I highly recommend it. Even if you're not really into fitness or whatever, it's very entertaining, and they're very open and honest just about life struggles. And it's like a couple struggling through life. It just happened to be in the fitness realm. And so, you know, you get a lot out of it. I enjoy it. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to put all those links down below, guys, so you can connect with Tim and Sam and let them help you meet your fitness goals. Guys, once again, thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Tim. Hey, Tim, before you shut it down, I did want to give you a big congratulations just on your the 75 heart. I just saw your before and after photo before. And I was awesome. It looks, you did do an awesome job, man. So. Nice.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was good. Now the goal is to you know, try to find, try to figure out with that all or nothing mentality, how not to go back to the other mode of being, right? And so I'm trying to work on
it. You know what? That's ultimately it, right? Is the long game. Yeah. And, the last thing to say too would be, this is an open invitation for you and anyone else listening, is we sometimes people don't think about this, and it makes sense because they're like, oh, these people get paid for advice, so I don't want to reach out. We give out free advice all the time. Instagram, if you want to send us an email, whatever, like social media is usually just the easiest. But if people ever want to reach out because they just have a one-off question or whatever, just like, hey, this is my challenge, what are your thoughts? We're happy to help people that are non-clients. So just reach out anytime with any questions regarding fitness, health, all that stuff. Awesome. So, yeah.
I think it's,
nice.
Look at that. Love it. Awesome. So cool. Well, thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Cool.